Feeling stressed, left without gravity, in an environment that gets more and more complicated and complex every day? Untangle your mind and go back to the roots of clear thinking. Get the original text of The Leviathan by Hobbes, The Two Treatises of Government by Locke, The Social Contract by Rousseau, plus the U.S. Constitution from Pennsylvania, bound together into just one practical book. That's right, Hobbes, Locke, Rousseau, and the U.S. Constitution, bound together into just one practical book to keep your costs low.
In this video, Jordan Peterson explains how anything you see and feel is part of the reality of your experience.
Now, Rogers would say, you know, that feeling you have when you hear about someone crossing Ebola with smallpox, that feeling you have in your body, that's a real thing, that feeling, and that's part of being. Now, for the phenomenologists, being is actually, it's complicated to define, and it's hard to understand. But what the phenomenologists do is start with a different set of assumptions. They don't assume that the best way to approach reality is to break it up into the subjective and the objective. They presume instead that the way that you should approach reality is by assuming that all of your experience is real. All of it. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't different categories of experience, you know, because you could still say a dream and the experience you have dreaming of walking down the street and walking down the street are still different things. And the phenomenologist would say, yes, you can keep your categorical distinctions intact, but you have to say that they're both real. Now, this is an assumption, and I told you why the assumption is generated. Part of the reason the assumption is generated, the alternative assumption, is because there are problems that emerge with the set of assumptions that make up the scientific worldview. Now, it's not that surprising that the scientific worldview can't encompass the subjective, because the scientific worldview was actually established by Bacon and Descartes, say, and by other thinkers of that time. It was set up to exclude the subjective from the conceptualization of objective reality. So you can't really criticize science because it does that, but you can say the fact that the subjective is excluded is a fault, or at least an incompleteness, and that incompleteness sometimes has extraordinarily serious consequences that you can't just dismiss. Because you might say, well, had the Soviets been successful in crossing Ebola with smallpox and aerosolizing it, then we might all be dead. And then you might think that any theory that leads everyone to be dead might reasonably be criticized for its assumption to universal truth. Now, you can debate that, but rightly so, but all I'm pointing out is there are reasons to go at this from another approach. Now, it was Rogers' basic assumption that you were more likely to be properly oriented in life if you adopted a phenomenological approach to your experience and to break up reality in that manner. So let me give you an example. When my daughter was about 3, she had a nightmare and she came running into her parents' bedroom and she told me her dream and she was all upset by it. She might have even been younger than 3 at that point. And she had dreamed that there was a clear stream and it was quite beautiful, and that there was garbage littering the bottom of it. Now, by that time, you know, kids are quite sophisticated in their ability to categorize, you know. By that time, she'd already learned the difference between kid things and adult things. And you think, that's a bloody complex form of discrimination, you know, because, like, what objective features do adult things share in common that differentiates them from kid things? You can't actually come up with a set of objective criteria that allows that distinction to be made. But kids, by the time they're 3, have got a pretty clear grasp of that. So they can come up with very sophisticated classifications. About the same time, one of my friends had a 2-year-old who went outside their house one day and looked down the street, and there were a couple of garbage cans knocked over, and the kid said, "Oh." And, you know, that's also extremely sophisticated because you think, you know, a whole street is a very complex visual set of visual stimuli. And to be able to glance at that and then to note that something is out of place and then to make an utterance of it to draw people's attention to it is a ridiculously sophisticated cognitive act. And my daughter was doing the same thing within the context of her dream. So she was upset about this. Now, it's quite interesting, eh? Because you think, well, why would someone who was three be upset about the fact that a stream, a beautiful clear stream, had garbage in it? You know, it's like innate environmentalism or something like that, innate concern for the environment. And that could easily be the case, you know. I mean, if we fouled our environment up continually during our evolutionary history, that was likely to have very negative consequences. Even birds clean their own nest, and so do bees, and, you know, they keep their hives clean and all of that. So it could be a very primordial instinct. Anyway, she came in with this dream, and she was quite upset. And then you think, well, there's a couple of things you could do about that. You could say, it's just a dream. Don't worry about it. Go back to sleep. But, you know, that's a philosophical statement, right? And it's a misleading one, or you could argue that it was a misleading one, because what does "it's just a dream" mean? Well, it means that it's certainly not something to take seriously like you would take something that occurred during the day seriously. It's a mere, like a fantasy, but with the definition of fantasy being some fundamentally useless act of play, I suppose, that you can ignore with no consequences. And not only that you should ignore it. And, you know, that's not necessarily true. Because then you're making the case, or you might be making the case, that you don't have to pay attention to products of your imagination. That seems like a pretty dopey thing to tell a child, given A, that anything creative that you ever produce is going to come out of your imagination, and B, the way that you set goals and plans for your future is by imagining them, dreaming about them, right? Everyone knows what it means to pursue a dream. And, you know, you might say, well, if you're depressed, it means all your dreams have disappeared. It's like, so maybe you shouldn't be telling your child that it's just a dream, and so you can ignore it and go back to sleep. You know, you don't know exactly what you're doing when you do that. You're certainly not paying attention to the child's experience, because she did have that image and it did make her upset, and those are facts. And as far as people like Rogers would be concerned, those are facts about reality, or they're elements of reality, and they should be dealt with as such. So I told her to close her eyes and to bring the dream image up in her imagination, which she could do very well, and then to imagine that she had some rubber boots on and that she could go into the stream and pick out the garbage and put it in a garbage bag, and that there was a garbage can nearby and she could put it in the garbage can. And so we went through that, and that calmed her down, and then she went back to bed. And then you might say, well, what am I doing that? Because you might say, well, that's just a fantasy, just like the dream, and because they're just fantasies, neither of them have anything to do with reality. But, you know, that again, that's not a very sophisticated way of thinking, because the dream presented my daughter with a problem, or you could even say a class of problems. And the class of problems includes all of those things that people do to, and other animals, of course, all the ways that the environment can be defiled. Well, that actually is an existential problem. And then you might say, well, what should you do about it? And the answer to that might be, well, maybe you should do something about it, insofar as you can do something about it, because then you're conceptualizing yourself as an active agent and not just a passive victim or a passive recipient of the problem. You could actually do something about it. And that's a way different message than it's just a dream, you can ignore it and go back to sleep. You know, maybe you shouldn't actually tell your child to be ignoring reality and go back to sleep. Maybe you should be telling them to wake up and see reality as clearly as they possibly can, and not ignore any of it, including their fantasies and their dreams. And that doesn't mean that their fantasies have the same reality as the reality that you experience with everyone else. But the fact that it's not the same reality that you experience with everyone else doesn't mean it's not reality.
Feeling stressed, left without gravity, in an environment that gets more and more complicated and complex every day. Untangle your mind and go back to the roots of clear thinking. Get the original text of The Leviathan by Hobbes, the two treatises of government by Locke, The Social Contract by Rousseau, plus the U.S. Constitution from Pennsylvania, bound together into just one practical book. That's right. Hobbes, Locke, Rousseau, and the U.S. Constitution, bound together into just one practical book to keep your costs low.